Welcome to the 2023 Volume 5, Issue 1, Summer Podcast Edition, Part 1, of the Journal of Philosophy of Emotion, published March 21, 2025. All contents are protected under the Creative Commons, Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivatives, 4.0 International Deed. For figures, citations, notes, and references, please refer to the printed articles at www.jpeonline.org. Table of Contents. Guest Editor Andrea Salpitera, University of Louisville, Kentucky. Moon Cecilia, 2023. Precy, Interdisciplinary Foundations for the Science of Emotion. Journal of Philosophy of Emotion 5, No. 1, 1-10. https://doi.org/10.33497/2023/summer.1. Maize Michelle, 2023. Semantic Dualism and the Role of the Body in Emotional Experience. Journal of Philosophy of Emotion 5, No. 1, 11-17. https://doi.org/10.33497/2023/summer.2. Mendonça Dina, 2023. Reflexivity in the Interdisciplinary Project for a Better Understanding of Emotions. Journal of Philosophy of Emotion 5, No. 1, 18-30. https://doi.org/10.33497/2023/summer.3. Article 1. Precy, Interdisciplinary Foundations for the Science of Emotion. By Cecilia Moon. Abstract. In the following Precy, I provide a summary of Interdisciplinary Foundations for the Science of Emotion. Much of what I say can be found in the About the Book section of my book, although I provide some elaborations here. My summary focuses primarily on the central aim of the book and the general strategy that I take in order to achieve my aim. What I present is a proposal for an interdisciplinary science of emotion. That proposal goes by the name of metasemantic pluralism superscript E, and a central principle of this proposal is what I refer to as the alpha-omega superscript E principle. My summary includes chapter summaries, which provides not only a more detailed account of my general strategy, but also a summary of the fruitfulness of this first principle for interdisciplinary research and theorizing in the science of emotion, including the work it can do in the areas of metaphysics, language, consciousness, intentionality, rationality, and epistemology. Finally, one should note that some of the contents of this précy should also provide a response to at least some of the commentators' requests for clarification, and I address the concerns not covered in this précy in my subsequent replies. What emotions are is the central question for the science of emotion, which includes answering whether emotions constitute a distinct category of experiences compared to judgments, beliefs, perceptions, sensations, effects, feelings, and moods. The central aim of my book is to answer this question by first identifying and arguing for fundamental principles for interdisciplinary research in the science of emotion, broadly construed. These fundamental principles, which constitute my proposed framework for interdisciplinary research and theorizing in the science of emotion, are presented throughout chapters 1 to 9, and I refer to this framework as metasemantic pluralism about emotion, metasemantic pluralism superscript E. The book ends with a sketch of a particular theory of emotion, semantic dualism about emotion, semantic dualism superscript E, which is only one of the many possible theories of emotion that can be developed under the framework of metasemantic pluralism, superscript E. Metasemantic pluralism superscript E also provides an interdisciplinary taxonomy of theories of emotion, the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion, which is intended to facilitate a deeper understanding of the various perspectives regarding what emotions are. In accordance with this taxonomy, the interdisciplinary discourse about what emotions are in the science of emotion can be understood as a debate between four fundamental kinds of approaches to theorizing about emotion: realism, instrumentalism, eliminativism, and eliminative realism about emotion. As a taxonomy of theories of emotion, however, the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion is not necessarily wedded to metasemantic pluralism superscript E. In other words, one can accept that the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion accurately reflects the logical space of fundamental kinds of theories of emotion, without also accepting metasemantic pluralism, Superscript E as the framework with which one approaches their research in the science of emotion. Yet, those who subscribe to metasemantic pluralism superscript E ought to accept the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion to the extent that it entails at least some of the fundamental ontology and logic of metasemantic pluralism superscript E. I introduce metasemantic pluralism superscript E as a starting point for unifying theories of emotion across the disciplines, from an interdisciplinary perspective, without consilience. It is both a descriptive and a prescriptive metatheory about how such interdisciplinary research and theorizing ought to be pursued. It is a descriptive metatheory to the extent that its fundamental principles are derived from past and current approaches to the science of emotion, and it is a prescriptive metatheory insofar as it provides fundamental principles for how one ought to define emotion. From an interdisciplinary perspective, this is how is-yes become oughts. Accordingly, metasemantic pluralism superscript E is a meta-framework, a second-order conceptual framework for theorizing about theories of emotion. As such, it constitutes a philosophy of science, the philosophy of the science of emotion. Metasemantic pluralism superscript E, however, does not attempt to ultimately resolve the problem of underdetermination in the science of emotion, which can be understood as the problem of how, given the totality of evidence that can be collected through human endeavors, one can adjudicate between incommensurable theories that are equally supported by that evidence. This is because the problem of underdetermination is a feature of interdisciplinary research and theorizing rather than a bug. It is a consequence of the alpha-omega principle of interdisciplinary inquiry for the science of emotion, alpha-omega superscript E, which states that any object of inquiry, specifically within the context of the science of emotion, as indicated by the superscript E, can be understood from various perspectives and each perspective may yield a distinct view, theory, or language. Furthermore, the truths of each of these perspectives are ultimately united by a shared object of inquiry. To this extent, the interdisciplinary framework proposed in my book is an objectivist framework. It proposes that any adequate interdisciplinary scientific theory will necessarily be a true theory, in terms of correspondence. It may also be ambivalent about realism versus nominalism about universals. The alpha-omega superscript E principle is the alpha principle because it is the preliminary assumption with which any adequate interdisciplinary research and theorizing in the science of emotion ought to begin, and it is the omega principle in that it is the final conclusion that ought to be inferable from the complete totality of the results of any adequate interdisciplinary research and theorizing in the science of emotion. In other words, it is the pillar that runs through the framework of metasemantic pluralism superscript E, and which leads to an understanding of the science of emotion as an interdisciplinary endeavor of unification without consilience, i.e., without the pursuit of a single unified language. It is the foundation for my proposed science of emotion, pursued especially from an interdisciplinary perspective, which plays the important role of establishing the fact of a shared object of inquiry. It provides interdisciplinary constraints for the science of emotion, broadly construed, in order to help ensure that those involved in such pursuits are not talking past each other. It explains why scholars from a variety of disciplines, including philosophy, psychology, anthropology, sociology, linguistics, etc., are concerned with the same object of inquiry, and it establishes criteria for evaluating at least some of the adequacies of contemporary and future theories of emotion, pursued from an interdisciplinary perspective. Chapter summaries. In Chapter 1, I begin my endeavor to answer the question of what emotions are, from an interdisciplinary perspective, by motivating the derivation of the alpha-omega superscript E principle. I do so by providing a brief summary of the most prominent kinds of philosophical and psychological theories of emotion between the late 20th to the early 21st century, cognitivism, non-cognitivism, social constructionism, and embodied cognitivism in philosophy, and basic emotion theory, appraisal theory, social constructivism, and psychological constructionism in psychology. In doing so, I aim to provide non-specialists with a general overview of the philosophical and psychological theories of emotion that this monograph especially addresses, as well as set the stage for subsequent arguments. Furthermore, I demonstrate how the differences in interdisciplinary taxonomies of theories of emotion can lead to skepticism in the interdisciplinary science of emotion, and I argue for the necessity of an alternative interdisciplinary taxonomy of theories of emotion as a response to such skepticism. Finally, I presuppose that emotion scholars all share the same object of inquiry in order to derive the first fundamental principle of metasemantis pluralism, the alpha-omega principle of interdisciplinary inquiry, alpha-omega superscript E. Some might regard this to be a viciously circular approach, but if one considers scientific endeavors as a matter of practice rather than simply a matter of logical deductions, and one can say that the sciences have made at least some progress so far in obtaining knowledge, then the approach is not viciously circular, but instead virtuously so. In the remaining chapters, I aim to demonstrate the fruitfulness of the alpha-omega superscript E principle, and thereby provide a proof for its truth. Assuming the alpha-omega superscript E principle, I present and argue for the metasemantis principle of deep perspective taking for the science of emotion, metasemantic perspective takinga, throughout chapters 2 to 3. According to this principle, one must consider the various theoretical perspectives regarding the meaning of the word emotion, or the name of a discrete emotion type, e.g., fear, joy, sadness, shame, within a variety of domains of inquiry and levels of analysis when conducting interdisciplinary research and theorizing in the science of emotion. In doing so, and anticipating Dina Mendonça's comment about reflexivity and the use of meta in my work, we can acknowledge the following levels and contexts of analysis. Level of meaning and corresponding level of factors determining meaning. Semantic analysis corresponds with metasemantic analysis. Semantic superscript REF analysis corresponds with metasemantic superscript REF analysis. Semantic superscript REFR analysis corresponds with metasemantic superscript term analysis. Semantic superscript REFI analysis corresponds with metasemantic superscript PRAG analysis. A semantic level of analysis is typically understood as the level in which the meaning of a word is analyzed. An adequate analysis of a relevant word, such as the word emotion, may amount to a definite description or a concept, but the primary aim is to give an account of the meaning of a word, e.g., emotion. We can, however, understand the semantics of a word in accordance with a referential, REF, perspective, which is the perspective in which one seeks to provide an analysis of the referent of the meaning of a word. A referential perspective, REF, can also be differentiated into at least two kinds, referential reflexive, REFR, and referential interpretive, REFI. The difference is that a referential reflexive, REFR, perspective is the perspective in which the context is a subject's own theory of emotion, folk or otherwise. In other words, when I speak of what emotions are from my theoretical perspective, or even when I am speaking of emotions from my own personal perspective, I am invoking the meaning of the word emotion from a semantic referential, since the meaning is about the referent of a word, and reflexive, since the relevant meaning is set by the context of the speaker's meaning perspective, REFR, at the meaning, semantic level of analysis. We can also ask what factors influence the semantics of a word, and when we do so, we are then entering a metasemantic level of analysis. At the metasemantic level of analysis, we can ask questions about the ontology of the referent to which a theory might refer. To do so might be to ask questions from the metasemantic superscript REF perspective of analysis, which is the perspective of thinking about the ontology of the referent of a particular term. For example, one might question whether the word emotion, given a particular theoretical perspective, might refer to an objective kind or a subjective kind of some sort. One can also ask about the metasemantic superscript term perspective, in which the question is not about the ontology of the referent of a word, e.g., the referent of the word emotion, but instead about the extent to which ordinary language intuitions ought to influence scientific decision-making about the meaning of a technical word. There are at least two positions that can be taken from the metasemantic superscript term perspective: 1. Optimism about ordinary language words, and 2. Pessimism about ordinary language words. There is also the metasemantic pragmatic perspective, metasemantic PRAG, which is about how practices and conventions influence the meaning of a word. Given the above, one can derive the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion, which helps to establish the fact that at least some scholars in the science of emotion share a primary object of inquiry. It does so by illustrating how different theories of emotion from across the disciplines, as well as within a single discipline, can be unified with some and differentiated from other theories of emotion. Yet, one might ask how the problem of skepticism is to be avoided given that the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion helps to demonstrate only that some emotion scholars share the same object of inquiry, across the disciplines or within a single discipline. One might also ask how we can avoid the problem of skepticism, given the existence of equally viable contrary or contradictory theories of emotion, as illustrated by the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion. I, therefore, argue in Chapter 4 for the fundamental base for interdisciplinary inquiry in the science of emotion, base superscript E, which is the principle that regardless of whether or not emotion researchers share the same position on what emotions are from the semantic referential perspective, e.g., emotion refers to a psychophysical brain state or mental state. The metasemantic referential perspective, e.g., emotion is an objective kind or a subjective kind, or from a metasemantic terminological perspective, e.g., optimism or pessimism about ordinary language, an adequate theory of emotion must recognize that ordinary intuitions about emotions serve the fundamental purpose of identifying the general explananda for the science of emotion. I do so by arguing that the philosophical and psychological theories of emotion that fall under the metasemantic superscript REF taxonomy of theories of emotion all adhere to base superscript E, and observe that the reason why they do so is because ordinary intuitions about emotions ultimately serve to anchor the science of emotion as an objective science. I also argue that base superscript E is logically distinct from optimism about ordinary language emotion terms by demonstrating how those theories that do not subscribe to optimism, eliminative realism and eliminativism, still imply the truth of base superscript E. An interdisciplinary science of emotion must also be one that can unify both materialistic and mentalistic perspectives. So, in Chapter 5, I argue for what I refer to as semantic dualism about the mind-body and their relation, which is a kind of reductive type identity theory about psychophysical explanations. I do so by first noting the significance of the mind-body problem for the science of emotion, and then by introducing David Chalmers' 1996, 2020a Hard Problem and Meta-Problem of Consciousness, 2018, 2020b. I then argue against an eliminative materialist, eliminativist, and interaction dualist response to these problems, and I provide my proposed solution in the form of semantic dualism. Semantic dualism maintains that the mental states, broadly construed, including as processes, that are referred to by a mentalistic language, e.g., beliefs, desires, emotions, pains, hungers, etc., are constitutively and definitionally reducible to the integrated sum of the material components of these states. As such, the integrated sum of the material components of these states are merely an account of these states in a materialistic language, e.g., component neural activity, allostatic activity, sensory-motor activity, etc. I also argue in favor of semantic dualism by responding to the meta-problem of consciousness. In short, I argue that the intuition, feeling, or belief that there is a hard problem of consciousness is an illusion, which can be explained by the operation of the mechanisms that are responsible for our causal attributions. I conclude by proposing semantic dualism as a fundamental principle for interdisciplinary research and theorizing, and subsequent chapters 6 to 10 can be understood as elaborating on this fundamental principle and solution to the hard problem of consciousness. I also offer a sketch of a theory of emotion in Chapter 10, which I refer to as semantic dualism superscript E. Yet, this particular theory of emotion, which subsumes the framework of metasemantic pluralism superscript E, is not an essential aspect of semantic dualism, since semantic dualism, which is a theory about the relationship between the mind and the body rather than a theory of emotion, can be a foundation for a variety of significantly differentiated theories of emotion. Semantic dualism, along with the alpha-omega superscript E principle, however, does entail that metasemantic pluralism superscript E, along with semantic dualism superscript E, are objectivist frameworks, even given that they fundamentally categorize theories of emotion as realist, instrumentalist, eliminativist, and eliminative realist theories. In short, realist, instrumentalist, eliminativist, and eliminative realist theories should accept that there is a fact of the matter, in terms of correspondence, as to whether or not their theories are at least falsifiable. Metasemantic pluralism superscript E proposes that it is at least this feature of objectivity that demarcates a science from a non-science. The notion of intentionality is also a central notion in the philosophy of emotion, but not necessarily in the psychology of emotion. Given this, in Chapter 6, I identify one of the major philosophical concerns, especially in the philosophy of mind, regarding the notion of intentionality, the problem of original intentionality, and I provide an explanation of the general import of this notion, It concerns questions about what constitutes a genuine mental life. Furthermore, my analysis suggests that a solution to the problem of original intentionality entails responding to the following four questions. 1. What is the explanandum of original intentionality? 2. What is the genus of original intentionality? 3. What is the differentia of original intentionality? And 4. How does original intentionality fit into a natural and hopefully scientific understanding of the world? By relying on Terry Horgan's 2013 argument for his proposed meaning of original intentionality, I move on to identify the referent of original intentionality as the phenomenon of understanding. I also identify the genus of original intentionality as having a genuine mental life, and I provide a proof of the existence of original intentionality, i.e., I help the reader identify the explanandum of original intentionality. I also rely on some of Galen Strawson's 2004-2008 arguments for his proposed notion of intentionality, i.e., genuine or real intentionality, in order to argue in favor of an alternative account of original intentionality, one which maintains the phenomena of understanding as an essential feature. More specifically, I argue that Strawson's notion of aboutness, which is also shared by Daniel Dennett, 1983, 1987, 1992, 2009, can be understood as constituting the genus of original intentionality, intentionality simpliciter. Furthermore, aboutness can be differentiated in terms of degrees of integration into a spectrum of subcategories of intentionality, with derived intentionality, as with the intentionality of atoms, rocks, sedimentary layers, and reflections in a mirror, at one end of the spectrum, and underived intentionality, as with the intentionality of living beings, at the other. Underived intentionality can also be differentiated in terms of degrees of integration, with primitive underived intentionality, e.g. of perhaps viruses, at one end and reflective underived intentionality, e.g. of beings with self-awareness, which necessarily entails an awareness of others, at the other end. Finally, the positive differentia, i.e. essence, of original intentionality, a positive account of what makes original intentionality the kind of intentionality that it is, can be defined as reflective intentionality, which is what Horgan takes to be the phenomenology of understanding and what Strawson takes to be genuine or real intentionality. The negative differentia of original intentionality, an account of what original intentionality is not as a member of its genus, which negatively defines what it is, can be defined by the conjunction of underived primitive, naturally derived, artificially derived, and naturally underived intentionality. In Chapter 7, I discuss the debate between cognitivists and non-cognitivists about emotion within the area of philosophy of emotion, and I isolate the relation between aspects of the world, real or imagined, and how they bear on a subject's well-being as the essence of what makes emotions intentional qua emotion. I refer to this principle about how aspects of the world bear on our well-being as the fundamental intentionality thesis of emotions, fit superscript E. And I explain how, due to the way in which the notion of intentionality has been typically understood within philosophy, as being significantly influenced by Franz Brentano's notion of intentionality as the mark of the mental, it is typically thought that the intentionality of emotions falls within the domain of the discipline of philosophy and outside the discipline of psychology. Armed with my alternative notion of intentionality, as proposed in Chapter 6, semantic dualism, as proposed in Chapter 5, and the fundamental intentionality thesis of emotions, which is derived in the earlier sections of Chapter 7, I argue that the psychology of emotion is also replete with concerns regarding the intentionality of emotions. I conclude this chapter by arguing for the fit superscript E as a fundamental principle for interdisciplinary research and theorizing in the science of emotion, broadly construed. The intentionality of emotions is intimately intertwined with the rationality of emotions, although they are distinct notions. In Chapter 8, I begin with a discussion of a variety of emotional experiences which demonstrate how emotions can be understood as being at times rational and at times irrational. I then go on to explain how the rationality of emotions can be understood in terms of their evaluative rationality, their epistemic rationality, and their ontological rationality, which allow us to know in at least three ways, and I argue for the acceptance of these notions as fundamental principles for the interdisciplinary science of emotion. Along the way, I derive the standard criterion for the rationality of emotions, the criterion for the ontological rationality of emotions, and the superordinate inference rule for a discrete emotion type, and I provide an argument for the controversial notion of the ontological rationality of emotions. For the sake of brevity, and perhaps also to pique the reader's interest, I will leave it to the reader to look further into these concepts. I conclude with a discussion of how the ontological rationality of emotions is related to both the intentionality of emotions and the notion of an emotion's formal object. In Chapter 9, I argue for reconceiving the structure of rationality in accordance with semantic dualism, and suggest that this alternative account presents a more suitable response to the cognitivist problem of recalcitrant emotions in the philosophy of emotion. According to my alternative account of the structure of rationality, being rational and being irrational can both be dimensionally defined along two axes, the axis of integration and the axis of recalcitrance. The axis of integration can be understood in terms of the density of the amount of unified information processing that occurs in a rational being, and the axis of recalcitrance refers to the susceptibility of a state, e.g., a belief, emotion, perception, or sensation, to warranting evidence. Furthermore, I argue that some states are recalcitrantly rational, such as universal truths, while others are recalcitrantly irrational, e.g., a disabled subject's inability to recognize a fearful situation as fearful. In doing so, I provide a general mapping of rationality and the ways in which emotions can be rational, irrational, and irrational. I also complete the elaboration of my solution to the hard problem of consciousness, semantic dualism, and my argument for the framework of metasemantic pluralism as an interdisciplinary foundation for a science of emotion. To motivate my proposal for reconceiving the structure of rationality, I begin by providing an additional argument for the unification of materialistic theories of emotion and mentalistic theories of emotion. I argue that an embodied cognitive framework, such as semantic dualism, and as a consequence metasemantic pluralism superscript E and semantic dualism superscript E, is a more suitable framework for interdisciplinary research and theorizing about emotions compared to both philosophical non-cognitive and cognitive frameworks. To do so, I critique Jesse J. Prinz's 2004 Non-Cognitive Perceptual Embodied Appraisal Theory of Emotion, and I argue that converting his theory into a cognitive perceptual embodied appraisal theory would provide a more consistent theory of emotion, especially with respect to elucidating a theory in which the intentionality of an emotion is represented by an emotional experience rather than in an emotional experience. I then critique Martha C. Nussbaum's 2001 Cognitive Theory of Emotion by arguing that the significance of value in our emotional experiences demonstrates that embodied feelings are ineliminable for an adequate theory of emotion. These conclusions are the implications of semantic dualism, applied within the context of an interdisciplinary science of emotion. In Chapter 10, I provide a sketch of a particular kind of theory of emotion, which I refer to as semantic dualism about emotion, semantic dualism superscript E. Metasemantic pluralism superscript E is the approach to the science of emotion that semantic dualism superscript E takes. To this extent, semantic dualism superscript E is a particular kind of metasemantic pluralist theory of emotion. Semantic dualism superscript E is also a realist theory of emotion. It regards emotion to be a legitimate object of scientific inquiry, broadly construed, and argues that the term emotion names a kind of embodied language that is a purely objective kind, i.e., is possibly independent of human conceptualizations. To this extent, semantic dualism superscript E is a kind of nativist theory. For an introduction to nativism, refer to Fodor 1975. One should also note that although these are all features of semantic dualism superscript E, they need not be features of all metasemantic pluralistic superscript E theories of emotion. According to semantic dualism superscript E, emotions are embodied cognitions that represent how aspects of the world bear on a subject's well-being, and as such they constitute an embodied language. I also explain how they are distinct from, yet related to sensations, effects, and other affectively laden experiences, such as hunger and moods, and meta-emotions. I also explain how the language of adult human emotions can be differentiated from the language of human infant emotions, and perhaps also non-human animal emotions, by appealing to the difference in the integration of the information of their intentionality. Emotions can also be experienced as a subpersonal process, an automatic, i.e. pre-reflective, conscious experience of which one is not aware, an automatic conscious experience of which one is aware, a deliberate conscious experience of which one is aware, or a pretense emotion. Emotions are not only active, but we can become aware of the exercise of our free will when we experience our emotions as actions, through deliberate, conscious experiences of emotion regulation. I also observe how, in virtue of this fact and their evaluative rationality, Emotions constitute the crown jewel of cognition and are essential to ethical considerations. Finally, I note that the discourse on emotion is constituted by concerns regarding at least three subcategories of a language of emotion: a first-order language of emotion, i.e. emotional experiences; a second-order language of emotion, i.e. a language of emotion words, which can also be a theory of emotion; and a meta-theoretical language of emotion, i.e. a language about theories of emotion. My joy, sorrow, anger, and shame as experiences are, therefore, a kind of language, the first-order language of emotion. Any theory that purports to give some account of emotion or an emotion entails a theory, to some extent, of emotion as a universal, at least in the sense discussed by Armstrong, 1978a, 1978b, or Lewis, 1983. Each theory of emotion is a second-order language of emotion, including a folk language of emotion. Metasemantic pluralism superscript E is a meta-theoretical language of emotion. It is a theory, a language about theories, a language of emotion. One of its principles is that theories of emotion can be placed into the fundamental categories of realism, instrumentalism, eliminativism, and eliminative realism. The names of these categories can be understood as constituting at least some aspects of a metasemantic pluralist superscript E language of emotion, a meta-language for the science of emotion. Article 2. Semantic Dualism and the Role of the Body in Emotional Experience. By Michelle Mays. Abstract: Moon's proposed taxonomy of theories of emotions highlights important commonalities and differences among a wide range of philosophical and psychological accounts and provides an astute mapping of the theoretical landscape. My critical comments focus primarily on the metaphysical account of the mind-body relation that Moon presents, and the implications of this semantic dualist account for three of the book's central topics: 1. Conscious experience, 2. Underived intentionality, and 3. What it means to provide an embodied cognitive theory of emotions. Moon's 2021 proposed taxonomy of theories of emotions highlights important commonalities and differences among a wide range of philosophical and psychological accounts and provides an astute mapping of the theoretical landscape. My critical comments focus primarily on the metaphysical account of the mind-body relation that Moon presents, and the implications of this semantic dualist account for three of the book's central topics: 1. Conscious experience, 2. Underived intentionality, and 3. What it means to provide an embodied cognitive theory of emotions. Most notably, Moon's commitment to the thesis that consciousness is identical to brain states seems to be in tension with the claim that the body beyond the brain plays a constitutive role in emotional experience and intentionality. Semantic dualism, type identity, and the hard problem. Moon's proposed metaphysical account appears in Chapter 5, where she characterizes semantic dualism as a type identity theory about the relationship between mental states and neurophysiological states. This account takes a position between strong and weak reductivism. Like strong reductivism, semantic dualism holds that consciousness can be broken down into its component parts. But like weak reductivism, it holds that on its own, the sum of the component parts cannot provide a complete explanation of consciousness. In addition to the sum of the component parts, what is needed for a complete explanation is the integrated information of these component parts. But even if consciousness is not explanatorily or epistemically reducible to neurophysiological states, type identity theory entails that it must nonetheless be ontologically or metaphysically reducible, Hannah and Mays 2009, and therefore nothing but these neurophysiological states. Indeed, Moon is careful to note that semantic dualism is not a kind of property dualism, since it holds that mental features are identical to physical features. That is, like color, mass, and height, consciousness is a material property and is ontologically reducible to, and thus nothing over and above, a thing's basic material properties. So, in what sense is this a dualist account? According to Moon, mentalistic languages about the mind and physicalist languages about the body and brain are distinct kinds of languages for speaking about living substances. However, she maintains that semantic dualism should not be identified as a kind of dual aspect theory or neutral monism, since semantic dualism says that the only kinds of substance and properties that exist are material substances and properties. Moon rightly notes that, like other reductive accounts, semantic dualism faces the challenge of addressing how mental phenomena and their associated material phenomena can be related in terms of an identity statement, and b, why these material phenomena give rise to conscious experience. Regarding a, Moon maintains that these identity statements assert both a constitutive and a definitional relation. Mental states are identical to material processes, some of which are distributed throughout the body, rather than being wholly localized in the brain. However, when Moon goes on to suggest that the neural correlates of conscious experience can be identified, this makes it seem as if she is committed to a neurocentric, brain-bound, Clark 2008 conception of experience. After all, if it is possible to provide a physical definition of what it means for something to be a conscious experience in terms of neural correlates, then why think that biophysiosocial causes and effects play a constitutive role? If a set of physically necessary and sufficient neural conditions can be identified for a conscious experience, then it appears that the rest of the body matters only causally or instrumentally, as a source of inputs and outputs for brain activity, Shapiro 2005. Regarding B, it is unclear how this account solves the hard problem, which concerns how and why this brain activity is accompanied by conscious experience. What Chalmers deems easy problems have to do with how we discriminate stimuli, report information, and monitor internal mental states, all of which can be cashed out in functionalist information processing terms. What Chalmers calls the hard problem, in contrast, takes us beyond information processing and functions. How and why do physical processes give rise to experience? Why do not these processes take place in the dark, without any accompanying state of experience? This is the central mystery of consciousness. Chalmers, 2003. Since Moon rejects panpsychism, she needs to explain why brain activity involves an experiential, what it's like quality, whereas other physical states and processes in the world do not. To address this challenge, Moon maintains that there is something special about material things that are alive. She writes, "A simple naturalistic answer to the question of why some material processes are also conscious processes, especially when not all material processes are, is that this is how conscious beings have evolved." Moon 2021-131. But how does the fact that beings like us have evolved explain why some material processes are also conscious/experiential, or why they involve a first-person perspective? Moon proposes that conscious experiences allow us to know, and that knowing is more conducive to survival. By virtue of our conscious experiences, we not only bring forth but also affirm or deny the existence of a very significant kind of value in the world, biographically subjective value, which contributes to effective decision-making. 131. Non-conscious, non-emotional beings would not have such information, except perhaps derivatively. Here Moon asserts that although a robot might act as if it had conscious experiences, including conscious emotional experiences, it would not genuinely have such experiences. But what does the robot lack? And why must a material substance be alive in order to exhibit conscious phenomenon with experiential qualitative character? Remember that according to semantic dualism, conscious experiences are type identical to neural correlates. At the end of the day, it's this brain activity that has evolved and has contributed to survival. Even if conscious experience is not explanatorily superfluous, it has no causal power aside from the neural correlates to which it is identical. At moments, Moon seems to resist this sort of reductionism. She maintains that conscious experiences are not simply the total sum of the necessary and sufficient material conditions that constitute them. Rather, the integrated sum total of the material processes that constitute conscious experiences constitute information that is above and beyond the simple sum of its parts. Although this may sound like a form of emergence, it is crucial to note that only a very weak form of emergence, some sort of epistemic or explanatory emergence, O'Connor 1994, is compatible with semantic dualism. This sort of emergence merely captures our scientific inability to predict certain kinds of physical properties. For example, our scientific knowledge of hydrogen atoms and oxygen atoms alone will not enable us to predict their chemical bonding as H2O. Nonetheless, the property of being dihydrogen oxide is literally identical with the relational interaction of hydrogen and oxygen, and not ontologically emergent from it, Hannah and Mays 2009, or anything over and above it. Likewise, conscious experiences are type identical to neurophysiological states and have no causal power aside from these material conditions. It remains unclear why living material things instantiate conscious experience, whereas other material things do not. Uendaravidi intentionality, the role of the living body, and inactivism. To account for both underived intentionality and emotional intentionality, Moon again points to the special status of living organisms. In Chapter 6, she maintains that the aboutness involved in underived intentionality is naturally integrated in virtue of the natural organization of the entity's functional material. The information processing carried out by inert materials is gappy, in a way that makes it different from the information processing carried out by the materials of living organisms. It is only the information processing carried out by my entire living being that allows for underived intentionality and generates all of my conscious, unconscious, subconscious, and non-conscious experiences. And in Chapter 7, Moon maintains that emotions involve a relation between some aspect of the world and a subject's well-being. Arguably, it is only entities that are alive that are concerned about their well-being. It seems clear that Moon wishes to draw a connection between being alive and exhibiting emotional intentionality, and to highlight some sort of linkage between mind and life. However, her metaphysical commitments make this more difficult to explain. In particular, Moon's reductionist account of the mind-body relation and her description of living organisms in mechanistic information processing terms seem to be in tension with the intuition that something new and special, e.g. conscious experience and underived intentionality, emerges only in living things. Why is the information processing carried out by inert materials, such as those of a very sophisticated robot, necessarily gappy or representationally limited? It is unclear why natural integration or organization generates experience and underived intentionality, whereas artificial integration does not. Note that other existing accounts of the mind, such as inactivism, Thompson 2007, Weber and Varela 2002, seem better positioned to make sense of the inseparability of mind and life and the connection between being alive and exhibiting emotional experience and intentionality. Inactivist accounts commonly characterize living animals as non-mechanistic, non-linear, dynamic systems and holds that both conscious experience and intentionality emerge out of the purposiveness and sensorimotor engagement of self-organizing, self-regulating, adaptive living systems. Instead of looking to neural correlates or to the intrinsic properties of neural activity in order to explain experience, this inactivist approach looks to the dynamic sensorimotor relations among neural activity, the body, and the world, De Paolo 2005, 414. It says that the conscious experiences of the subjectively lived body are fully bound up with the living body, Hannah and Thompson 2003, and its embodied engagement with its surroundings. Likewise, intentionality emerges out of organismic processes of self-regulation aimed at sustaining and enhancing adaptive autonomy in the face of perturbing environmental events, Thompson and Stapleton 2009-27, and affective experiences can be understood as emergent features of the whole complex system, animal or person, as it enacts an emotional interpretation, Colombetti and Thompson 2008-59. According to this inactivist view, nature contains dynamic physical wholes or systems whose proper parts relationally interact in a way that yields novel global properties of these systems. These global features not only cannot be predicted by us from scientific knowledge of the proper parts alone, but also have causal powers over and above the sum of these component parts. In my view, inactivism moves us away from neuroreductionism, and by linking together the lived body and the living body, it also moves us away from the kinds of Cartesian assumptions that Moon says she wants to resist. In addition, it offers a way to make sense of why conscious experiences and underived intentionality are features of living systems, but not non-living ones. However, it is less clear how to make sense of the connection between life and mind given Moon's commitment to reductionism and type identity, her claim that the living body can be described mechanistically, and her belief that underived intentionality is simply a matter of information processing. Semantic dualism and what it means to provide an embodied cognitive account of emotion. These concerns lead directly to questions about the embodied cognitive account of emotion that Moon presents in chapters 9 and 10. The backdrop for this discussion appears in chapter 1, when Moon maintains that dualism was the primary background against which philosophers raised concerns about thoughts, feelings, intentionality, and rationality. Psychologists, in contrast, have worked within a materialist framework. But given that many or even most philosophers of emotion probably would describe themselves as physicalists or materialists, it's important to get clear about the nature of this so-called dualist background against which philosophers theorize about emotion. What Moon actually has in mind, I think, is that most philosophical accounts rest on a Cartesian assumption to the effect that the mind and body are distinct, and that thoughts and bodily feelings are separable. Psychological accounts, in contrast, are not so much under the influence of this thought-slash-body dichotomy. To see this Cartesian thought-slash-body dichotomy at work, consider Moon's discussion of the accounts of Prinz and Nussbaum in Chap. 9. She maintains that Prinz is working within a materialistic framework, which emphasizes the bodily dimension of emotion, whereas Nussbaum is working within a mentalistic framework, which emphasizes the cognitive-slash-evaluative dimension of emotion. But the key issue, I take it, is that both theorists are operating with a Cartesian assumption to the effect that these are ontologically distinct or separable dimensions of emotion. Indeed, what permeates the long-standing philosophical debate between so-called cognitive and bodily theories of emotion is a tendency to treat the cognitive and bodily dimensions as fundamentally distinct or separable, and then to identify emotions with one or other of these dimensions. The early Solomon, 1993, for example, argues that feelings are not a central or essential feature of emotions, but rather an ornamentation. According to his cognitive account, fear cannot be a mere bodily feeling because the physiological contour of fear is no different from the physiological contour of anger, and while fear can be appropriate or inappropriate, feelings cannot. Instead, emotion should be understood as an evaluative judgment about one's situation, a personal evaluation of the significance of a particular incident that projects our values and ideals. 1993, 126. A central motivation for the feeling theory, on the other hand, is the common sense idea that bodily feeling is essential to emotion, which seems to flow directly from the phenomenology of emotional experience. Along these lines, Whiting, 2009, identifies emotions with feelings, characterizes emotions as non-cognitive, and maintains that fear should be identified with the awful edgy sensation that assails my guts and limbs, 287. Despite their divergent views on what defines emotions, both sides seem to agree that bodily feeling is non-cognitive and non-intentional. To see this, note that like Solomon, Whiting denies that bodily feelings have objects or a representational structure. He maintains that the edgy feeling that pervades my guts and limbs upon seeing a tiger just is the emotion, fear, and that the representation of a tiger is not part of this experience. In order to account for the fact that fear of tiger and other object-directed emotions do seem to involve mental representations, Whiting recommends that such mental states be viewed as composite mental states consisting of an emotion, a feeling, and a thought, with representational content. This compound mental episode comprises a feeling together with a representation, but the sensation presents only as a non-representational feeling state. Whiting, 2012, 100. Thus, although they disagree about what constitutes the essence of emotion, both the early Solomon and Whiting seem to agree that thought and feeling are detachable components, and that bodily feelings are non-intentional and have no representational content. However, a growing number of emotion theorists have begun to challenge the alleged split between the bodily and cognitive components of emotion. Colombetti, 2007-2010, for example, has argued that emotions are simultaneously bodily and cognitive evaluative, and that bodily feelings are constitutive of the sense of personal significance that emotions involve. Thus, there is good reason to think that the appraisal and bodily aspects of emotion are constitutively interdependent, Colombetti, 2013, rather than being extrinsic to or a mere byproduct of appraisal, bodily arousal is part of the very experience of appraisal, as a vehicle of salience. For example, an interview situation is evaluated and experienced as anxiety-provoking in and through the state of one's body, so that the process of appraisal overlaps with the bodily dimension of emotion, Colombetti, 2013, 112. Central to Colombetti's account is the notion that emotions are inactive, that is, they are a matter of active bodily engagement. During an emotional experience, subjects do not simply passively receive information from their environment, but instead actively participate in the generation of meaning. They do so by becoming selectively attuned to their surroundings in and through their effectively aroused bodies. In Chapter 1, Moon suggests that, to the extent that embodied cognitive theories regard both thoughts and feelings to be necessary constituents of emotions, they reject the thought-slash-feeling dichotomy established by cognitive and non-cognitive theories. But in her view, since embodied cognitive theories typically hold that some form of thought is essential to an emotional experience, they still can be regarded as cognitive theories. The embodied cognitive theory presented by Colombetti, however, treats thought and bodily feeling as inseparable. Thus, it does not make the sorts of Cartesian assumptions that are pervasive throughout much of the literature on emotion. Indeed, by emphasizing the interdependence between bodily and cognitive dimensions of emotion, Colombetti's account undermines the notion that bodily feelings lack any sort of representational content. It also challenges the assumption that appraisal is a heady intellectual process that takes place apart from bodily arousal. In addition, this account moves us away from the notion that emotions are passive and explores how the bodily elements of emotional experience might make an active and significant contribution to the appraisal process. Together with the amygdala, bodily arousal and endocrine activity help to maintain an organism's homeostatic equilibrium, enhance attention, and prepare the individual for action. Thus, the appraisal process is best characterized as a broadly organismic activity, one which overlaps with the bodily component of emotion, Colombetti 2013, page 112. Colombetti's inactivist account thereby treats emotions as embodied, inactive cognitions, and also draws linkages between emotion and the dynamics of living systems. In Chapter 9, Moon states that she aims to present an embodied cognitive theory of emotion, one which explains how the body plays a non-trivial, constitutive role in emotional experiences. But why think that semantic dualism can provide an adequate backdrop for an embodied cognitive approach? Moon's commitment to type identity theory, and the corresponding idea that emotional experiences are ontologically reducible to their neural correlates, seems incompatible with the idea that the body plays a constitutive role in emotional experience. In an apparent effort to resist this sort of neuroreductionism, Moon suggests that although each of the components of emotion can be specified in terms of its neural correlates, it is only when these components are integrated as an explanation of a sufficiently complete emotional experience that we can regard them as aspects of an emotional experience. And in Chapter 10, Moon maintains that emotions are not simply the material processes that constitute emotional experiences, but also the unique ways in which such processes can be integrated in order to yield the variety of emotional experiences that are experienced by emotional beings, Moon 2021, 274. In Chapter 9, it seems that Moon is pointing to some sort of explanatory integration, but the quote from Chapter 10 is less clear. Does Moon think that some sort of ontological integration is at stake? If these various components can be cashed out in terms of brain activity, and emotional experiences, like all experiences, are type identical to neural correlates, then in what sense does the body beyond the brain play a constitutive role? Embodied cognitive theories of emotion, as I understand them, aim to account for the ontological integration of emotion's evaluative/cognitive dimension and its bodily dimension. I worry that semantic dualism is unable to provide an adequate metaphysical backdrop for such an account. Article 3. Reflexivity and Meta-Emotions in the Interdisciplinary Project for a Better Understanding of Emotions. By Dina Mendonça. Abstract: The localized commentary focuses on the way in which meta-emotions appear in the last chapter, and how reflexivity more generally is addressed. It shows how meta-emotions require a detailed explanation, which should capture their role and place within the interdisciplinary theoretical proposal in the already dense book. Though the commentary is limited to this specific issue, it is important to acknowledge and admire the proposal for its unity based on an interdisciplinary foundation. It highlights why every theory of emotion seems to capture something important about the nature of emotions. Nevertheless, Moon's book would have been greatly improved with the connection of her own proposal to previous work done on meta-emotion. Though it is understandable it did not take place in the book, this commentary aims to point out possible future research directions which will connect the unifying hypothesis with reflexivity of emotions. Interdisciplinary Foundations for the Science of Emotion, by Cecilia Moon, 2021, is an ambitious philosophical book that may require more than one reading for a full understanding and for posterior ongoing discussions. Overall, when a book is as dense as this one, it is almost impossible to give a final assessment of the reach of the project. Therefore, its evaluation will only be progressively attained as the various fields of expertise take up the proposal for the Interdisciplinary Foundation for the Science of Emotion. This commentary will focus on the way in which meta-emotions appear in the last chapter, and how it embodies reflexivity more generally. It will show how meta-emotions demand a more detailed explanation of their role and their place in the interdisciplinary theoretical proposal than the one that is given in the already dense book. Before diving into this specific issue, it is important to recognize that this serious and thoughtful effort for unity, based on an interdisciplinary foundation for the science of emotion, is admirable. It underlies why every theory of emotion seems to ring a little bit true, explaining why, when one reads the various theories of emotion, one is invaded by the weird sense that everyone is right, even when philosophers in different fields of research are saying quite different, and sometimes opposite, things, Mendoza 2012-218. In this regard, Interdisciplinary Foundations for the Science of Emotion is a brave and bold attempt to overcome the mere acceptance of a pluralistic scenario concerning theories of emotion, Brady 2019, D'Souza and Scarantino 2018, Griffiths and Scarantino 2009. Overall, the book stands as a step forward for the science of emotion, independently of which further parts of the overall project may be progressively validated by future research on emotion. The unquestionable importance of meta-emotions. The recognition of the importance of meta-emotions is unquestionable, and it has been the focus of several articles in the recent literature, Jones and Bodker 2001, Jaeger and Bartsch 2006, Mittmann-Scrubber et al. 2009, Hoffman 2013, Mendoza 2013, Jaeger and Banninger-Huber 2015, Norman and Ferns 2016, Howard 2017, Belli and Brancano 2017, Mendoza and Sagua 2019. Though generally defined as emotions which have another emotion as its object, some thinkers have defined them as an emotional ground. For example, Belli and Brancano write that a meta-emotion is not purely an emotion about emotion, as Gottman, Katz, and Hooven 1997 argue, but also a pre-emotion, a step before. We use the prefix meta to indicate a step before a first-order emotion. Belli and Brancano 2017, 430. Of course, the phenomenon itself is still to be fully worked out, and it is still under discussion in the philosophical literature. Therefore, it is not clear whether there is one common phenomenon about which different scholars disagree on how to best conceptualize, or if the variation is due to the way in which these different scholars are identifying different aspects of emotional processes under the same concept. Given the uncertainty of the issue in the literature, it is unfortunate that Moon does not show how her unifying proposal provides a theoretical framework to accommodate, or not, previous definitions of meta-emotions and its various meanings, e.g., Belli and Brancano 2017, 431, and how to critically evaluate them under her unifying proposal. Moon's final chapter would have been greatly improved if it had explained in more detail how her proposal builds upon previous work on meta-emotion. This would have highlighted two important issues. First, how different meta-emotions, e.g., anger, sadness, righteousness, about a first-order emotion, e.g., jealousy, can give a very different take on the meaning of a first-order emotion, and consequently how a first-order emotion can differently impact one's actions and attitudes. This is especially important for Moon's project, given that Feagin has suggested that there are not two different emotion names for first-order and second-order emotions, which makes it even more difficult to identify the distinction. That is, one recognizes the crucial distinction, even though the way in which first-order emotions and second-order emotions are not infallibly distinguished, because people use the same words to describe both types of emotional response, Feagin 1995, 208. If Moon had taken up this issue in the book, I'm sure she would have further contributed to a better understanding of how a meta-emotion can also be understood as a pre-emotion, which anchors other cognitive and emotional processes, or if the description of meta-emotion as a pre-emotion is debatable, or how the same phenomena can be both a secondary emotion as well as a pre-emotion. This would have paved the way to further explain how Moon's three layers of languages about emotions, the first-order language of embodied emotional experiences, the second-order language of emotion words, and the third layer constituted by a meta-theoretical language of emotion, Moon 2021, 162, have a great potential in providing tools for thinking more deeply about emotional layers of emotion. The importance of meta-emotions cannot be overstated. They have multiple theoretical implications both in other fields of philosophy as well as in other disciplines. For example, the effect of meta-emotions in experience is visible in ethical situations because meta-emotions modify the effect of emotions in action. In general, that is, a person who feels angry may be more inclined to undergo self-correction than a person who is merely sad about their first-order emotions, and a person who feels righteous about their attitudes and actions will, perhaps, act more freely in accordance with their jealous thoughts and feelings, than a person who is sad or angry about their first-order feeling of self-righteousness. The full exploration of these interactions between first-order emotions and meta-emotions is for now a philosophical claim, and the take from empirical research is that it might be useful to transfer what is already known about metacognition to further research on meta-emotion, Norman and Ferns 2016. Though some recent work explores the connection to emotional intelligence, D'Amico and Geraci 2021. Nevertheless, when layers of emotions are introduced, we are more capable of explaining why, for instance, in the face of injustice, some people will speak out and take action, whereas others will remain silent and passive, depending on the evaluation and the scope of action they think is possible given the risks at stake. Mendoza 2018. Meta-lingu and meta-emotions. The meta-language of emotions introduced by Moon can provide further theoretical tools to explain why becoming aware of how meta-emotions offers a more detailed description of persons and situations, and may help people involved in disputes find a resolution to their conflict, as well as an overall good communication between different people. Jones and Bodker 2001. This would have been an important complement to better understand the possible interactions of the three kinds of languages of emotions enumerated by Moon: common experiences of emotion, sense speech or theoretical language about emotions, and a metalanguage for theoretical languages of emotion. Even though the third layer described by Moon, which is constituted by the metatheoretical language of emotion, indicates various degrees of reflexivity of the emotional landscape, the book fails to fully explain in detail how the third level constitutes the most reflective form of a language of emotion compared to the first two. Moon 2021, 162. Part of the problem is how, even though the existence of meta-emotions is undeniable, and they have been identified in the literature at least since the 1990s, Bayer 1990-24, attention of the phenomenon of meta-emotion has only recently become a strong focus of interest. Mendoza and Sagua 2019, 124-5. Meta-emotions have been defined as beliefs about primary emotional processes, e.g. Beer and Mineta, 2010, Ferrari and Koyama 2002, and as emotions which have other emotions as their objects, Pugmire 2005, Jaeger and Bartsch 2006, Fegan 1995, Mendoza 2013, Howard 2017, others have labeled them as evaluative cognitions, Elster 1999A, 1999B, Bartsch, L 2008, 2010, others as conditions for all other emotions, Belli and Brancano 2017, and others as a set of strategies to act on emotional information, Coven 2011. Refer to Mendoza 2013, Mendoza and Sagua 2019 for further details. Usually, added reflexivity provides additional insight, Rosenberg 1990, that makes issues appear under a different and new light. So, part of the appeal of recognizing reflexivity is to describe the insight it can provide. In the last chapter, in which the reader hopes that this may be fully elaborated, Moon refers back to previous chapter writing that, because the focus of this chapter is to provide a sketch of a theory of emotion, and I provide an example of a meta-theoretical language of emotion in chapters 2 and 3, I will not further discuss this third kind of language of emotion in this chapter. Moon 2021, 162-3. Thus, the reader is left with the strange impression that to fully understand the insight of the interdisciplinary proposal in what concerns meta-emotions and reflexivity in general, it is necessary to go back and reread chapters 2 and 3, and specifically on the description of the third language. Yet, if the reader undergoes this revision, there will be nothing that helps the reader to illuminate the astonishing impact of reflexivity. In sum, a more direct link between the meta-theoretical language, which is about the already available theories of emotion, and the changes it brings to the first-order theoretical body of language, would have been important for the reader. The reflexivity of emotions. In Reflexivity and Emotions, Rosenberg showed that human reflexivity transforms the nature of emotions radically, in part because reflexive processes can be identified in virtually every important aspect of human emotions. Rosenberg 1993. Rosenberg defines reflexivity as the process that happens when someone or something acts back upon itself, and there is more than one way to acknowledge reflexivity, since it can be done by emotional processes themselves or by other mental processes. That is, reflexivity is testified by the way in which people feel about their own feelings, as in the case of meta-emotions Mendoza 2013, by the way in which people think about their feelings, by how their desires reflect their feelings, and also by talking about their feelings. Thus, language clearly provides a special possibility for emotional reflexivity, being theoretically explored with the third language of emotion proposed by Moon. Luckily, Moon can take up the topic in future research to show that the profundity of her proposal is able to accommodate a more detailed discussion of meta-emotions. In addition, it is crucial to point out that, as Rosenberg explains, this reflexive ability is socially grounded. One of the reasons why Rosenberg thinks that this reflexive trait sets human emotions apart from the emotions of other species is because, as a result of social interaction and communication, the human being comes to take itself as the object of its own cognitive and agentive processes, Rosenberg 1990-11. The social interaction is an unavoidable aspect of human emotion, and its link to language expression seems to be a unique quality of the human emotional experience. In light of this, one can raise the hypothesis that the third layer, which proposes a meta-theoretical language of emotion, can further explain how to better understand a meta-emotion's regulatory mechanisms because of how it presents the various theories of emotions already available under a new unifying light, and this might ultimately help us to further understand the importance of the meta-level. Nevertheless, it is important to recognize that the meta-language is used for logical and semantical analysis, and it does not obviously match the meta-label used for describing self-conscious and self-reflective mental states. Thus, in addition to the needed discussion about how to take meta-emotions, it would have been important for Moon to connect or separate the two uses of the conceptual philosophical label of meta-. This might have illuminated how and why reflexivity of emotion can generally contribute to mental health, and how meta-language about theoretical description of emotions can help to better understand the phenomena of emotion itself. Without a doubt, exploring this interconnection will greatly amplify the unification effort of Moon's interdisciplinary foundations for a science of emotion. Meta-emotions and the regulation of emotional processes. The way in which meta-emotion can have an important role for the regulation of emotional processes doubly explains their use for explaining the installation of dysfunctional reflexive mechanisms, as well as how to find ways to overcome them. The way in which emotions can be layered, as when emotions take other emotions as their objects, Pugmire 2005, 174, grants the reflexivity of emotions the possibility of a regulatory role in the meaning and value of first-order emotions. For example, being angry about being sad, compared to being proud about being sad, is a completely different emotional experience of sadness. And since meta-emotions can have such an impact, the reflexivity of emotional processes modifies them and promotes a change in the whole emotional experience. Mendoza 2013, 394, which can be captured by a regulatory mechanism, Mendoza and Sagua 2019. The importance of meta-emotions lies partly in the way in which they influence and mold the impact of a first-order emotional experience, and the transformative effect they can have is what can make them especially relevant, Mendoza 2013, 390. This means that, in addition to their role in the regulation of emotional processes, meta-emotions may offer a specific illuminating role to the linguistic expression and description of emotional episodes. For example, when explaining to another person a sense of mixed feelings about an issue, the introduction of a meta-layer improves communication because to say that one was emotionally confused is vaguer than to say that one was sad but simultaneously happy about being able to feel sad, even though it made the overall emotional experience feel more confused than simply feeling sad about the event. This happens because information obtained with the description of meta-emotions is not simply a matter of having more information about the experience. The extra knowledge we get from meta-emotions may change the meaning of the experience altogether. Mendoza 2013, 394. Ultimately, this additional power of naming layers for better descriptions highlights the way in which language helps people deal with emotions and contributes to better regulate emotional processes. When we add to the conception of meta-emotion that they can also anchor situations, it becomes apparent that the way in which language can, or cannot, capture emotional experience makes a difference in the emotional experience and its communication. It would have been important to further develop the reflexivity of meta-emotion, connected to the meta-semantic principle, and consider its contribution to emotion regulation in opposition to emotion generation. For example, anger can be generated by an unfair situation, while the regulation of emotion of anger refers to all the types of processes a person can acquire, develop, and cultivate to deal with the outburst of anger. Recognizing how emotion generation concerns what triggers emotions to appear, and that emotion regulation refers to how one continues or not to experience the triggered emotion would have given an added sense of strength to the overall book. Importantly, because according to some perspectives, the distinction between emotion generation and emotion regulation exists on the assumption that the two are biologically distinct, Gross and Barrett 2011 4. Moon's proposal could have shown its strength by indicating how the interdisciplinary proposal can better deal with this added element of the distinction between emotion generation and emotion regulation. One possibility for Moon's proposal would have been to explain that emotion generation is biologically different from emotion regulation, and perhaps how the difference helps to better explain how meta-emotions can be thought, expressed, and consequently also consciously examined. Moon's interdisciplinary proposal is ideal for considering a variety of ways in which emotion regulatory processes occur. Emotion regulation can be automatic or controlled. It can appear at the conscious or at the unconscious level. In addition, the regulatory process may happen in one go or be the outcome of an ongoing sustained process. This gives Moon the possibility of explaining why reflexivity does not necessarily award a positive self-corrective direction, even though it is an undeniable gateway for fruitful emotional development and improvement in patterns of emotional processes. Of course, emotion regulation is more apparent in researchers who adopt a basic emotion perspective or an appraisal perspective as opposed to theorists who see emotions more as a social and psychological construct. Gross and Barrett 2011, 8. Given that language might be the way in which people better grasp their emotional processes, and the way in which the regulation of emotion can be further reinforced, the exploration of this dimension of the philosophy of emotions can help everyone become more aware of how the different theoretical perspectives condition and format certain aspects of emotion research. Thus, the link of meta-emotions to language may turn out to be crucial for Moon's interdisciplinary foundation for emotion theory, and it would have provided an added contribution to the interdisciplinary project. In addition, it would show experts from all areas interested in contributing a better understanding of emotions how to become aware of the theoretical bends and tendencies of the different theories, and hopefully, to enable theorists to be less at the mercy of the consequences of their theoretical assumptions and more able to incorporate areas of emotion research that appear within other theoretical perspectives. Mendonça and Sagua 2019, 127. So even though Moon's last chapter refers to meta-emotions and does justice to the reflexive nature of emotional processes, it fails to incorporate it in the interdisciplinary mood of the overall book project. Moon's absence is not surprising, and mostly mirrors the general absence in the literature of emotion theory. According to Howard, 2017, this happens because meta-emotions cannot satisfactorily be handled by theories of emotion at our disposal. For Moon's proposal, this means more specifically that the issue of reflexivity in general, and the topic of meta-emotions in particular, was a missed opportunity to overcome this gap in the literature. Meta-emotion and intentionality. The challenge to integrate how meta-emotions demand a revision of the standard notion of intentionality, Red Howard 2017, could have been taken up in chapters 6 and 7, through Moon's own revision of intentionality of emotions. As Howard explains, theories of emotions share an assumption about the intentionality of emotions that make it impossible to deal with meta-emotions properly. Emotion theories assume a type of tripartite model in which intentionality is given by the relation of emotion to the formal object, is mediated by another mental state, such as a belief, perception, memory, or imagining, that represents the object in question, Howard, 2017-3. That is, the intentionality of emotions is explained by the way in which the object of an emotion is something given to us by way of other states, Diana and Tarroni 2012-85. However, as Howard elaborates, the simplest and most direct episodes of meta-emotions turn out to undermine the tripartite model as a thesis about the necessary structure of emotional intentionality, Howard 2017-6. That is, even though the tripartite model is capable of dealing with some cases of meta-emotions, it cannot deal with all cases. Theories of emotions are able to deal with meta-emotions when there is another mental state that represents the object of the emotion at stake, such as when one is secretly proud of the fact that one feels sad, Howard 2017-4, because in this case the sadness must be represented to the person who feels it by another state, such as the belief that one is sad, Howard 2017-4. It turns out that, In many other cases of meta-emotion, no other mental state is necessary to mediate. Refer to Howard 2017N for full discussion. It would have been highly significant for Moon's proposal to show how the interdisciplinary proposal and her take on the intentionality of emotions can better deal with this meta-emotion challenge. The chapters on intentionality could have provided the ideal opportunity to offer a way to handle the dense elaboration of how intentionality can be seen in light of the interdisciplinary proposal. In addition, because it has also been argued that theories of emotion are incomplete if they do not take up the challenge of meta-emotions, Mendonça 2013, Howard 2015, Belli and Brancano 2017, and at least one attempt has been made to show that a perceptual theory of emotion can overcome that problem, Mitchell 2019. Not integrating the notion of meta-emotion within the general framework in more detail can be seen as a major misfortune. In addition, it brings to the surface another opaque issue of emotion theory, namely, the link between emotional processes and language continues to be a difficult and yet promising focus for emotion theory. That is, because the notion of meta-emotion is not described in more detail in relation to the already existing literature on the topic, it does not accommodate the way in which the names for emotions and meta-emotions are the same. In an article entitled The Pleasures of Tragedy, Susan Fegan describes this difficulty by stating that both in ordinary and aesthetic contexts, it is difficult to distinguish between emotions and meta-emotions, because we use the same words to describe both types of emotional response, Fegan 1995, page 208. Emotions and their linguistic expression as key elements for interdisciplinary research. The interconnection between emotions and their linguistic expression in words and phrases is a key element in the interdisciplinary space for research on emotions, Niemeyer and Durvin 1997. It is a specifically difficult and problematic issue, Weers-Bicka 1999, Wilsey 2007, because of its many ramifications and its overall complexity. For the present purpose, three remarks will suffice to show the potentiality of Moon's work. First, Moon's proposal did not take up the problematic issue of how research on emotion is connected to common sense taxonomy and descriptions of emotion, nor does it explain how emotion research can transform the common sense vocabulary. Moon seems to assume that there is a continuum between ordinary experiences that many people have about emotions, often translated in common sense language about emotions, and research. She writes, "When I speak of ordinary intuitions about emotions, I am speaking of the ordinary experiences that many people have which allow them to determine not only whether or not someone is experiencing an emotion, but also for many, which allow them to determine what kind of emotion they are experiencing to a certain extent." Moon 2021, 67. However, the overall book is itself an effort to show that there is a loop between research and ordinary descriptions of emotional experience, which means the suggested assumptions might be misplaced. In fact, Moon is quite aware that the names people use to describe their emotions are not part of the standard vocabulary for research on emotions. Her interdisciplinary proposal is a recognition that many fields of research on emotions, e.g., psychology, psychiatry, and neuroscience, take great effort to make sense of how hard it can be to bring to conscious awareness certain emotional processes. Not only is it the case that people often badly identify what they are emotionally experiencing, some emotional experiences may also mask others, Pugmire 1994, 114. Also, and perhaps more importantly, part of the research on emotions from a great variety of fields aims to provide insights to the daily life experience of emotions that are not provided by common sense accumulative information about emotions. For example, the notion of meta-emotion can grant a different way to examine people's disagreements, Jones and Bodker 2001, and the argument for how instances of acratic feelings are also a part of the emotional landscape can give added insights into how emotions affect action and mental health, Melle 1989, Mendonça 2016. Clearly preventing the readers to make such an assumption will greatly help readers of the book to better understand its greater goal of unification. Second, when language and emotions are taken into consideration, often there is the underlying assumption that everyone speaks a language with full control and full knowledge of the specific language spoken. English, Portuguese, French, German, Mandarin, Spanish, Polish, Arab, etc. Authors often ignore the variations and the different ways people speak a language: British, North American, Australians, Jamaican, English as lingua franca, etc. Even though variations occur among different nations or places in the globe, or even between different areas in the same country and between different individuals. The variations pointed out are ignored despite the way in which they can be decisive for communication. In fact, one might raise the hypothesis that there is a sense in which this variation may be responsible for specific creative activities and can be seen as a fundamental part of the emotional labor of artistic creative processes. Third, if this is true of emotion words, it is also the case for the meaning of the ordinary word emotion. Despite Moon's statement that there is nothing problematic about the label, because all the different senses refer back to the general English language word of emotion, Moon 2021-38, some previous research has shown that even this is problematic, Griffiths 1997, Dixon 2003, and emotion words also partake in historical transformations worth considering, Smith 2015. Consequently, the continual reference and appeal to first-person intuitions demands that variations between people, nations, and cultures, as well as historical developments be taken into account, for these have also been refined, changed by both scientific developments and artistic endeavors. Moon's proposal of a metasemantic level is a good promise for a transformative contribution, and may in the future show its potential. Perhaps it will reveal how language fails to capture emotional experience, or how language enables capturing aspects of emotional information beyond common sense understanding. However, this promise is only half fulfilled, and perhaps a more detailed description of the role of meta-emotion combined with the third language of emotion, at the metasemantical level, may be what is required for its full development. Concluding remarks. Notwithstanding the limitations identified, it remains important that Moon's work, Interdisciplinary Foundations for a Science of Emotion, offers a fertile ground to deal with the reflexivity of emotions, given both its recognition of meta-emotions and the promising connection it establishes between emotions and language. In sum, it provides a more complex and layered theoretical picture of the emotional landscape, which can provide future possible research directions for the philosophy of emotion and the general foundation for interdisciplinarity. I want to conclude by expressing joy in the fact that Moon's work unquestionably provides a jumpstart and renewed opportunity to set out an interdisciplinary foundation for emotion theory. The need for a common ground for the pursuit of interdisciplinary research on emotion has been reinvented, and it will hopefully enable further successful dialogue among different research expertise and help every field of expertise to continue to contribute to a better understanding of emotions. This marks the end of the 2023 Volume 5, Issue 1, Summer Podcast Edition, Part 1, of the Journal of Philosophy of Emotion. Please go to 2023 Volume 5, Issue 1, Summer Podcast Edition, Part 2, of the Journal of Philosophy of Emotion, to continue listening to this issue.